like to say that I have 4,029 days clean. So, those of you who are sitting out there and think that you can't have 4,029 days clean, if you walk this thing down one day at a time, you can have more than this. So, keep coming back. And our next speaker will be speaking on intimacy in recovery. And his name is Ellsworth.
Hey, family, my name is Ellsworth. I'm an addict. My clean date is September 15th, 1996. I got a sponsor who got a sponsor. My sponsor got working knowledge of the steps. I've done the steps. I'm in service. I stay in service. And I believe in helping an addict, any addict, find freedom. And I say all of that, and I'm real proud of those things. I say them because they give me a point of reference of where I started, where I am, where I'm going. But for real, all I got is today. I'm real clear about just having today because I realize that I'm one drink or one drug to going right back where I started from. And I do not want to be walking up Georgia Avenue at 3 o'clock in the morning, one hand like this, the other hand digging through trash cans to find a can so I can get that last one. Because after I get that one, I'm going to stop. I'm going to change. I'm going to get my life together. 25 years later, I found Narcotics Anonymous. I like to drink till I'm drunk, then I'm going to go get high. I like to get my keys and get in my car. As a direct result of that behavior, I wrapped my car around a tree. I got out the car, I didn't have a scratch on me, and I thought I had done something. I thank God, though. I thank God that I didn't kill nobody else. Got the truck, the car towed, got the car fixed, and within 2 months, I did the same thing again. Normal people, when they have recurring problems like that, start to realize that there may be an issue with drinking and drugs. I thought I had an issue with falling asleep. Because that's what happens to me. When I get real high and I drive, I go to sleep. And after I hit shit, I wake up. I went up here by myself and tried to solve my own problem. And I resolved it because I said, all I got to do is get somebody to ride with me, and I'll be all right. So I got my best friend to ride with me. Both of us got drunk. Both of us got high, and both of us went to sleep. I was still driving. I ended up in the side of a parked car. Thank God we didn't get killed. I backed that car up and I hauled ass. If I hit your car, I apologize. You are in my eighth step. My best friend, who's now an ordained minister, don't remember anything. He never woke up. He stayed asleep the whole time. And I think about it. I told him now a couple weeks ago, I said, I would have killed you and you wouldn't even know it. But that's how I do, man. And the sick part of my disease is that after doing all of that, and I know what the consequences of my behavior is, I will strap my two little kids, who at the time were 5 and 10, in the back of the car, high, drunk, and everything else. And thank God for God, thank God for their mother, because she would take them right back out the car. I say, what you doing? She say, saving my children. And I repaid her by cursing her out, because she embarrassed me in front of my friends. And I did that on a regular basis, man. It got to a point that I lost all respect for her, and I blamed it on the drugs and the alcohol. One particular night I came home, drunk and high again, that was my normal, and proceeded to climb up on top of her, and she wasn't having it that night. She was a church-going woman who didn't curse, but she told me to get the fuck off her. And she proceeded to tell me about how I smelled from all the liquor and the drugs. And I repaid her again. I called her out her name. I called her a bitch. And before I got the CH out, she smacked the shit out of me on my neck. And I turned around and I hit her. I hit her as hard as I could. I gave her a black eye. And that was the worst feeling I ever had in my life. I can never live that feeling down. That's the one time I ever hit a woman in my life. It's the only time, and it's one time too many. And she forgave me long before I forgave myself. And I'm still trying because I still hurt. Even sharing it right now, it hurts. Because I swear I'm not that type of person, and I shared that with my sponsor. And he told me I was abusive. And I told him, nah, man, it was her fault. She knew I was high. She hit me first. He said, nah, you abusive. You hit that woman. You abusive. Those words hurt me, man, and I can't live them down. But I've realized today, man, that anytime I get high, anytime I get drunk, I'm subject to that behavior. I don't give a shit about nothing when I'm high. I don't care about no kids. I don't care about no rent. I ain't trying to pay no bills. Fuck everybody. I don't care. And as a result, I lost everything. Material things went first. They went fast. Get up in the morning, shit gone. My story was they got legs and walked out. I don't know. But the thing I remember the most is how many people left. And I'm not talking about half partners. I ain't talking about people I use with. I'm talking about all the people I love. All of them left. All of them got tired. They cared about me more than I cared about myself. They prayed for me when I wouldn't pray for myself. And I repaid all of them the same way I repaid my kids' mother. I took from them until they couldn't take no more. When they left my life, when they cut me loose and let me go, it wasn't because they were angry at me. It wasn't because they didn't love me. It was because they was tired. They were tired of watching me die one day at a time. They were tired of watching somebody who had all the hope and promise and all the potential in the world give up. And I was fine with it. As long as I could keep smoking that rock. As long as I keep getting that drink and driving somebody's car, I was okay. I never thought I had a problem. I thought everybody else had a problem. When I hit stuff, I blame it on the car being parked in the wrong place. Somebody put a pole where it wasn't supposed to be. It was never my fault. I came into Narcotics Anonymous after suffering through all the pain you could suffer through. I was introduced to the program in 1986, but I didn't get clean until 1996. I got clean in 1996 because throughout that 10-year period in between when I was introduced and I started the program, I tried to do it my way. My way does not work. No matter how many different ways I tried, it does not work. I went to treatment. Relapse is part of my story. I went to treatment. I got a couple of days clean. I passed a couple of urines, got a couple of baths, got some money in my pocket, and declared myself cured. When I declare myself cured, I always have an anniversary. My anniversary is at the same place, a place called Edgewood Terrace Apartment Complex, at the same table where I started from, with the same guys I started with the same dope on the table. And I walk in there talking about, man, my life done changed. 15 minutes later, it's like, I'm gonna start over tomorrow. And I don't have a problem with it, man. I suffered from a disease that's trying to take my life, and I helped the disease. I finally came to this program as a result of pain. But when I first walked in the door, man, I tried to identify my way out. Because the first thing I heard when I came in here is people talking about shooting dope. I didn't shoot dope and nod. I smoked crack and geeked. I had a part-time job cleaning carpets, picking up every crumb that there was and tasting it. If I couldn't tell what it was, I smoked it. That's eating dirt. That's what I'm talking about. People was talking about being incarcerated. I wasn't incarcerated. I was held, detained, arrested, and held overnight. But I wasn't incarcerated. So I thought. So I found each and every way. I found a way to get out of here, man, until the last time I came in here. I heard people sharing about pain, and I had no way to get around that, because the pain of how I was living exceeded my desire to keep on living that way, and I wanted something different. And the only way I was going to find it if I stayed here. And believe me, man, it's a hard road. It's a long road. It's a road I never, ever, ever thought I would stay here this long. But y'all grabbed hold of me, and y'all held on to me. No matter what I said or what I did, my thing was to sit in the back of the room near the door so as soon as the meeting was over, I could get out of here. And y'all let me sit back there and get out of here until I moved my ass all the way up to the front, because I was hurting. I would be in a meeting like this hurting. All I got to do is raise my hand and ask for some help, and I could not do it. I could not raise my hand and ask for help. I'd be in a room like this with a room full of addicts who want to help me, and I felt like I was by myself. I didn't think I would ever stay here this long. Thank God for God. Thank God for the program. My sponsor asked me about coming up here and doing a workshop. I said, hell no. I did not want to be up here standing in front of no crowd of people, because I'm scared. Fear will freeze me in my tracks. Fear will keep me using coke because I don't want to do nothing else. I'm afraid to find out what's going to happen if I try something else. I didn't want to be up here, but he told me a long time ago, if you don't address your fears, you're always going to be afraid. So sooner or later, you're going to have to go through them. So that's why I'm standing up here. Second thing he said, well, what's the topic? He said, intimacy in recovery. I said, oh, hell no. I said, hell no, because intimacy in recovery is what I struggle with. Intimacy and recovery is big boy stuff. Past me, man. My first 2 years, I was just clean. That was all right for a minute. And I wanted something more out of this. So that's when we started having to embark on this road, talking about intimacy and recovery, into me see. First thing I did, told him I couldn't do it. He said, you could. I could. I said, well, what do I need to do? He said, read the literature. I said, okay. I picked the literature up and I started reading it, and that shit was not giving me no answers that I wanted to hear. I wanted it written out for me, what I was supposed to say, so I could say it and be done with this, because I'm scared. But I kept reading. And finally, I started coming up with some answers. First thing I need to tell you is my definition of intimacy was all screwed up. I thought intimate meant sex. I thought the only time I used the word was when I'm trying to be intimate with her, or I'm going to be intimate on that ass tonight, or I'm going to do some intimate things with her, jumping off the pillow, whatever. That's the only time I ever used the word. When I came in Narcotics Anonymous, y'all started talking about intimacy. Y'all gave me a new definition. Relationships without boundaries. I was lost. I had no idea. My relationships always had boundaries. My sponsor said, you got to take a look at that. You got to get into the exact nature. You got to find out why you got boundaries, why you won't let the program in. I said, why? Things going okay. If it ain't broke, why fix it? It was broke. It was still broke. I wasn't getting the maximum out of this program. This program has put so many things in my life. It's done changed. My vision is like this. The programs is like this. But I got to do the work. I don't want to do the work. I'm lazy. No account. I'm a scoundrel. But y'all left it up to me, man. And every time when that pain becomes so great, man, I will do something different in a minute. So I had to look at this. I had to go back. And I can tell you, I went all the way back. I went back to 8 years old, 8 to 12 years old. And I started identifying in with some feelings. See, my name is Ellsworth. I call hell being Ellsworth. Number one joke in my elementary school was, Ells, what are you worth? Second joke was worthless. Those were my two names. Everywhere I went, I heard that joke. That shit was not funny to me. It hurt. It hurt even more when you found out you can't fight everybody, you can't argue with everybody. It hurt even more than that when you be in the class, because I was a good student, and I got my hand up because I got the answer. Ain't nobody else got their hand up. And the teacher say, go ahead, Elmore. And then he come back behind that. Oh, I'm sorry, Alonzo. Go ahead. That shit hurt, man. I took all them feelings. I bottled them up. I put them in here. I thought they went away. If you don't address feelings, they don't go away. They grow. They fester. They show up in other areas. They manifest themselves in other areas. Mine manifests itself as low self-esteem and self-hatred. I hated my name, therefore I hated myself. I started hating the way I look. My ears too big, my lips too big, I'm too black, I'm too short, I'm too tall, I'm too skinny, too fat. I started hating my family. My father worked, my mother didn't. She took care of home. They did the best that they could do. It was me and three brothers and a sister. But we couldn't buy the expensive tennis shoes that people had. We had to go to the thrift store. We got a pair of Chuck Taylors. They fit me. Once I got too big for me, I passed it to my brother. They got too big for him. He passed it to my next brother. I see people buying $200 tennis shoes. I don't know how long they last, but them little 50-cent tennis shoes we had lasted generations. We passed them down. I had a younger brother who skipped a couple of years. We put the tennis shoes on the shelf till he got old enough. But I had a whole bunch of feelings, man. I had them all balled up in here. I didn't know what to do with them. They grew. I started trying to find acceptance. My acceptance, I started reaching out to all the wrong things. I started validating my existence by what y'all thought about me. I based my insides on your outsides. Shit, man. As long as you loved me, I was worth being loved. As long as you cared about me, I was worth being cared for. Once y'all left, though, man, I was fucked up. Feelings came back. Inadequacy. I looked and looked. I searched and searched, man, and I could not find it. I was a prime candidate to use drugs and alcohol. Because once I started, man, it seemed to be the equalizer. Everybody I knew used. So once I started using, I fit right in. Then I started changing my name. I became Daryl. I became Pig on another side of town. I even changed my name one time to El Capilaro. That shit didn't work. What I'm talking about, man, is I started putting up a bunch of masks. I started building a wall between me and everybody else because I ain't want to get hurt no more. I ain't want to go back to them 8-year-old feelings, man, where y'all talk about ills, what are you worth? I felt abandoned when my friends laughed at me. I thought they was my friends and they was gone now. They was on with them people. I hated everybody. I carried that shit with me for years, not knowing what it was. Then I come into Narcotics Anonymous. Y'all talking about get to the exact nature. Shit, I don't even know. You got to know who you are to get to the exact nature. If you don't have no idea who you are or who you working with, you guys going to get to know exact nature. I found out how to get to the exact nature. Step work gets you to the exact nature. Step work took me to the exact nature. When I went to the exact nature, I started talking about them feelings. And them feelings I didn't want to share with y'all. I ain't want y'all to think I was a punk. I want y'all to think I was soft. I ain't never robbed a crap gang. I ain't never did shit out there. I tell you, I ain't really been to jail. I ain't go to jail. I'm one night in jail. But I ain't want y'all to know that. I had all these secrets, so I put these walls up, man. I ain't want y'all to know that. When she left, I cried. So I had a wall up when I came in here. Program wasn't getting in that far. You can come a little way. You stop me from using, you all right. But you ain't getting that far, man. That exact nation shit, man, you hold that for the next one. I can't do that one. That shit hurt. You hurt long enough, you're going to want to do something different. You hurt long enough, you will drop them drawers, and I mean literally, I don't mean get naked in front of nobody talking about here I am. I'm talking about you will drop that mask, you will drop everything, and you will put it out there. Because you're going to get tired of feeling that way. I got tired of being in the Narcotics Anonymous program feeling like I was by myself. I got tired of being in the Narcotics Anonymous seeing people grow and judging their recovery on mine, wondering why I'm not growing. Well, I ain't doing no goddamn work. How am I going to grow? So I started doing work. I started digging deep, man. An addict told me, get a relationship with God, get a relationship with self, get a relationship with everybody else. The intimacy that you need to get in this program starts there. The intimacy for me started in a relationship with God. That relationship started through prayer. I prayed a lot. My prayers were short at first, then they started growing. Longer and longer. I started having open conversations with God on a regular basis. I'm talking about long ones. Pull up a chair, get some coffee. We're going to be here for a while. Because I need to let this go. I got to get this off me. I don't know why I'm feeling what I'm feeling, but I don't want to feel it no more. Help me. So mine started with prayer. And through that prayer, I started to gain some acceptance. What I found out, man, was I didn't do a thorough first step and I didn't do a thorough second step. I had not surrendered and I did not trust God. Because I based everything on feelings and I just didn't want to feel. What I found out in this program is that I spent 25 years thinking I was using. I spent 25 years trying not to feel. I spent 25 years medicating feelings that I didn't want to resurface, and that shit does not work. So I started with prayer. I started praying to this God. I started having conversations with this God. I got comfortable having these conversations with this God. I found some acceptance for the God in my life. I realized, again, all these true miracles that were happening to me in the program were a direct result of His care, not mine. I thought me and God's will and mine were parallel. They went together. I was wrong. God's was this way. Mine was that way. In the second step, near the last paragraph, is three words in the end of a sentence. It said, acceptance becomes trust. That's when it started for me. That's when the intimate relationship started for me. Once I had acceptance for my higher power, this God, that He could make it all better, and I didn't need to help Him, I gained acceptance in this program. I started to gain acceptance for Him. I started to trust the God that I was praying to. We started an intimate relationship that carried over to the people in the program. This is a God-given program based on spiritual principles. Principles incorporated in the steps. You work the steps. You take the principles with you. I believe God works through people, so I started having conversations with people. I started sharing things that I never wanted to share before. I had built a wall up that was built on pride, rebellion, self-centeredness, self-destruction, self-hatred. And all of a sudden now I started having some tools to pull them bricks back out and bring that wall down. All my little shady little secrets, all the stuff I tried to hide, all the feelings I didn't want to expose started coming out. And each and every time one of them came out, another brick came down. And as those bricks came down, the wall came down. See, and we're in a program where you got to allow the program of God in so you can get out. If you don't let the program, if you got a wall up like I had, the program can't get in, you damn sure can't get out. Because it works two ways. And as that wall came down for me, and I started to actually live the program, my life changed. All of a sudden, I wasn't hurting as much. My relationships changed. The intimacy we talk about in the program of Narcotics Anonymous shows up in my life when my sponsor and people in my network can look in my eyes and look right down in my soul. They can tell when stuff going on with me and I don't even know. I can talk to my sponsor now and he'll say, Ellsworth, are you all right? And I say, yeah. See, you don't look all right. You don't sound all right. Are you really all right? Finally, after about 15 questions, I will go in and say, yeah, I need to talk to you about this. I got people in my network now that can hear my voice on the telephone and tell when something's wrong. That's what I'm talking about, an intimate relationship. But more importantly, that intimate relationship showed up for me, and I had to have it in the third step when I make this decision. Because I got to turn this thing over. And if I don't turn it over, I can't continue with this program. When I made the decision to turn over, I had an intimate relationship with God and the program. Because when you make a decision to turn your will and your life over, you can't do it with reservations and restrictions. It's got to be a whole process. You got to give it all up. You can't part with it. You can't give up half and keep the other half. That's crazy. I'm the one got me here. Why would I want to keep some shit that got me here in the first place? This program is special to me. I love it. It introduced me to somebody I had never met before. I heard a lot of people coming into this program. One of the people I heard the most was my mother. When I was in treatment, they told me my mother was an enabler. My mother carried me for 9 months. Took care of me all my life. And when I was smoking crack and I told her I needed $20 to get to work, she gave me the $20 and she said, do you want something to eat? While she was cooking, I went upstairs to try to find more money. She cared about me more than I cared about myself. She prayed for me when I would not pray for myself. My mother was not an enabler. My mother was my mother. She loved me more than anything in the world. Her only hope for me was that I would get my life together. I called her this morning because when I was thinking about this and sharing about intimacy, I thought about her and I called her and I told her I loved her. I told her I was going to lead this workshop. She said, well, Elsworth, get up there. She don't call me Elsworth. She called me El, really. And she told me, get up here and tell the truth. And that's what I tried to do. One other thing I want to share, man, is that my father is my role model. I love him too. He's still alive. And I got a lot of gratitude for him. See, I'm a junior. My father thought enough of me when I was born to name me after him. And I got a lot of gratitude for that today, man. I love this program. I'm a father to my children today. I'm a friend. I'm a husband. And if you don't think you need step work, get married. Those who clap and know, you really get into some step work. I called my wife today, too. She said, don't worry about it. You're going to do all right. I'm just grateful. The theme is gratitude, man. Intimacy in this program, I couldn't get this without becoming intimate, without establishing that intimate relationship with the God of my understanding in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It just won't work for me. I keep trying to do it my way. Once I get intimate, man, I get the trust and the faith that's needed to go on with the program. So, I think that's about my time. Today, man, I'm just grateful. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad y'all are here. Everybody made it safe. I've been having a ball. I don't know about nobody else. So, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for letting me share.
Once again, I'm Wayne. I'm an addict. And the next speaker we have is Vernon. And he'll be speaking on self-centered fear. And that's a topic that I first met him, and I shared some with him. And when I left the meeting, I felt a whole lot better. And that's what this program does. It's a we thing, and he made me feel so much better because I told him I was a jealous bama. I told him I get jealous over little stuff. And he said a few things to me, and when I left the meeting, I went home with a totally different attitude. So with that, I'd like to thank Vernon, and you welcome him to speak on self-centered fear.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Vernon. I am a recovering addict. It's but for God's grace and mercy that I stand here today clean and serene. And I want to give a shout out to my DC crew out there. How y'all doing? Yeah, this program truly works. And thanks a lot, Ellsworth, for sharing. For a guy said he didn't have much to share. Sure got to start shifting some gears back here. But that's my man, though. We operate from the same area, and I'm proud of his recovery. And it's but for God's grace and mercy that I'm here today and have truly the opportunity to give this wonderful gift back. And I take my recovery very serious, but I don't take me as serious as I used to because I still get the same thoughts. And sometimes I still act out on them thoughts if I'm not careful and if I'm not working this wonderful gift of recovery. But my topic today is about self-centered fear. The ultimate character defect out of all character defects, the tsunami, the Armageddon, the end of days. The reason why I say that is because if you take a look at all the things that motivate you and the things that you have problems with in your life, if you look at it close enough and if you strip it down to the bud, neck, and core, you will find some fear in there. And self-centered fear, I'm not talking about the fear that you get when somebody put a pistol up to you and tell you, give me your money. I'm not talking about the fear that you had when the bully in school threatened to take your lunch money. I'm talking about the self-manufactured fear. The fear don't have nothing to do with nobody else. I'm talking about something that is manufactured in my head, even before I'm given a task to do anything. That fear I get when a job opportunity is in front of me and I'm afraid to apply for it. That fear I had when I saw a young lady that I really cared a lot about, but I was scared to ask her for a chance. That self-manufactured fear. She ain't did nothing to me. She didn't threaten me. I threatened myself. I've been my own enemy for a long time. And I heard my man shared earlier about how we can do harm to ourselves and be locked in a prison and not be legally incarcerated. Be an emotional prisoner, trapped in his brain, afraid to move forward because I'm afraid to be me. But I'm going to talk a little bit about how it was for me to get here. I'm from Washington, D.C., and from the northwest sector of Washington, D.C. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. Everybody in my family either drank or used drugs or practiced some abnormal behavior. So it was easy for me to adopt them behaviors. I was a very poor kid. And Ellsworth talked about the thrift store stuff, you know. I'm a product of that environment also. You know, my family, we used to get, back then, they didn't have, food stamps. So they gave us, supplement food, like the powdered eggs and the block of cheese and powdered milk, a big can, a silver can of peanut butter, you know. And we used to be very creative in making meals in the 60s, you know. And my father used to fool us a lot. A lot of times he would go out and get some vitamin D milk, and he'll fix up some powdered milk, add some water to it, and put it inside the vitamin D container. And we think we getting some real deal vitamin D milk. Then you pour the milk, and you see the milk was look almost like water. But deep down inside, it really didn't matter because it put food in our stomachs. You know, that was the most important thing was to eat, you know. And I was very ashamed of the way I was brought up. It wasn't a whole lot of love in my household. Wasn't a whole lot of, oh, I love you, little Vernon, I love you. I can recall a time when my mom said something about, I only want to use the language. She said what? I had five other siblings. My parents, my mom said that we were six wasted F's, you know, and to grow up as a kid and experience that kind of feeling coming from your mom, the one that you're supposed to really love and supposed to be the nurturer of the home, it hurt me for a lot of years. So I grew up as a very fearful kid, a very unloved kid, a very insecure kid. I felt inadequate in a lot of areas. I grew up, I was always the smallest guy. I always wanted to be a big boy. I wore glasses, so I used to get teased on. I used to get joned on, so I had to learn how to fight. I had to learn how to be impressive. And out of fear, I got in touch with being a get-wit, nick-wit, because I wanted to be accepted. Rejection would devastate me. So I did what I had to do to fit in and get along. And for a long time, that was my behavior, you know, even as an adult. And if I ain't careful in recovery, I'll do it in recovery in the name of people pleasing. So I really didn't like Vernon. So I did everything possible to try to be an overachiever. And I did pretty well in school, and also served honorably in the United States Marine Corps for 6 years. And I took that behavior with me in the Marines. You know, I wanted to be with the guys who had it going on. I wanted to be with the guys who could pull all the women, the ones who could dress the best, the ones who could fight. I wanted to be accepted on the fronts because it was hard for me to accept me out of the self-centered fear that was brewed inside of me. It was very important for me to get a response from you saying that, oh, yeah, he's a cool dude, or he's crazy, or he's this, he's that. Because that would make me feel good. But it took for me to be beaten into submission, 21 years of active addiction, to realize that I don't have to live like that. I don't have to allow fear to dominate my life anymore. Because it did it for a long time. Everything was motivated. Everything that all my personal responses in any way that I acted was motivated from the fear. But after coming into these rooms, you all told me some things. I had to get to the exact nature of what was going on with me. I had to get honest with myself. I had to build a relationship with my God and my understanding. In building that relationship with my God and my understanding, it made it much easier for me to build a relationship with myself. And I ain't talking about a relationship on the outside or female or wife or... I had to build a relationship with my God and my understanding and myself first before I can build a relationship with anything. Everything starts and ends with me. And I needed a God of my understanding to help me to get in touch with me. And in doing that, I embarked on doing step work. Step work helped me tremendously. And when I finally got to the fourth step, I was able to get to the core of the disease, and I was able to take a look at why fear dominated my life. And once I was able to talk about it in the fifth step, I was able to get a lot of relief. And I was also was able to understand the fact that we're more alike than we are different. A lot of people were suffering from the same character flaws as the character defects that dominated my life. They shared the same thing. My sponsor identified in on almost everything that I shared. And that helped me to get better with Vernon, you know. And today what I do is I let my God and my understanding lead the way for me. When I'm confronted with situations, just like when I was told I had to speak at this convention, initially, you know, the brain always going to magnify things and always going to make it seem far worse than it really is. But my heart is in control today. My heart told me that, Vern, it ain't even about you. It ain't about you getting on that stage. It's about you getting some help and possibly helping somebody else. And allowing people to see how wonderful this program is, because it took a true miracle like me to be beaten into submission, and today I'm going on 21 years clean. That's what this thing is all about. It ain't about me coming up here grandstanding and wearing the flyest gear I could possibly find to get up here and try to impress somebody. It's not even about that today. See, if I was still allowing fear to dictate what I was supposed to do, then I would have been focusing on that. And I would have been nervous and confused on about what I want to say, have something scripted and rehearsed. It ain't about that. It's about operating from the heart. You know, if I'm serious about recovery, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, it's going to come out in my sharing. And today is about learning how to live what I'm saying. I don't work a perfect program. This program is not about perfection. It's about growing along spiritual lines. It's about getting better one day at a time. It's a get better program. And there's still a lot of areas that I still need help in. But thank God, I only have to do this thing just for today. I don't have to worry about tomorrow. It's about staying clean just for today. And that's the thing that really keeps me grounded. Just knowing that I can just keep this thing real simple and just do it just for today. And sometimes I can break it down even further and just focus on just doing this thing 1 minute at a time. When things get so overwhelming, when things seems like when they're about to get a little out of control, I can shift the gears and downshift it, put it back in first gear and say, hey, Vernon, just focus just on doing this thing 1 minute at a time. Don't worry about what's going to happen 2 hours down the road. Because if I do, I'll jackpot myself. I'll be so pre-consumed with worrying about 2 hours down the road, then I'll step up and mess up what I'm supposed to do in this next minute. The same way it was when I smoked crack. When I smoked crack, when I took a hit, I was always thinking about the next hit. It was hard for me to enjoy the blast because I'm thinking about the next package I need to get later on. Because I don't have no more money. So I'm figuring out what can I do, how can I lie, who can I take something from to get the next package? And I ain't even finished hitting the one I got now. And I can do that right in recovery if I'm not careful, if I allow self-centered fear to dominate my thinking. So today it's about keeping it real simple, y'all, keeping it real simple. You know, I had a little dilemma that happened on Friday. I had a newcomer, a guy who I met in the rooms, and he asked me to sponsor him, and I sponsor a lot of guys, you know, and I told him that I'll get one of my sponsees to sponsor him, and I told him to meet me at a meeting, and he met me at the meeting. The next meeting I met him at, he had already chose a sponsor, and so, but deep down inside, this guy still kind of looked upon me as being a sponsor, and he called me on Friday and said that individuals he's supposed to came down to Ocean City with left him. And he asked me, can he get a ride down? I say, sure, I'm going that way. No problem, you know. And I met him at a meeting. And I picked him up and we rolled down. But the journey coming down here wasn't what I anticipated, you know. I'm a very peaceful guy. I'm a laid back guy, you know. I like to listen to my little music and enjoy the scenery, watching the barns and the open grass field, the corn fields, and enjoying the beauty of being clean today. You know what? I can pay attention to that kind of stuff today. And he talked the whole entire time. I couldn't hear no music. It was hard for me to focus on the beauty around me. But I had to realize that God knew, God had set me up, y'all. You know, he said, hey, I'm going to put you in touch with some patience and tolerance here. And so, you know, we got to talk, and he had 6 months clean, so, you know, real toxic, and then he's on some medication too, you know, and he wore me out, y'all, and I just wasn't ready for it, but I had to get in touch with some acceptance, and we managed to make it here on time, and then when we got here, he had to pick up an indigent package, and I picked up my stuff. And it was around 4 o'clock. And you know how it is when you get to Ocean City, y'all. Y'all ready to get to the hotels and get your stuff taken up to the hotel rooms and get unsettled, lay back for a minute. And, you know, so I was in here for about an hour and a half waiting for him to get his stuff situated. And God was still testing me, you know. I had to move Vernon out the way for a change. You know what I mean? But I'm saying this to say that self-centered fear was involved in that, too. Because, see, I fear a lot of times when I got to get outside myself to be there for somebody else. Because deep down inside, the self-centered nature of this disease is all about me. So when I have to get outside of me, it's a fearful thing. Because it's something I don't want to do. Most of the things we fear is stuff we don't want to do, right? So, but that put me in touch with some extreme acceptance, you know. But eventually I got over to the hotel around about 5:45 and got my bags unpacked and things took care of itself. He managed to find some accommodations and they gave him a registration package and it worked out, you know. And I thank God for that. And I just thank God for the fact that he put me in a position to be able to give back, y'all. Because you know how being around the rooms for some years, y'all, you kind of forget about the pain that newcomers go through, and because you know we got new problems now. You know, we got paying car notes and paying mortgages and deadlines at work and counting money and sorting through what women I'm gonna deal with today, and you know all these things that you deal with once you be here for a minute, right? But he really allowed me to put myself back in the shoes of a newcomer, y'all. You know, and sometimes I need to be reminded that newcomers need us, y'all. And I challenge all the people that have been here some years in the program to be available for a newcomer, because that's what this thing is all about. That's what y'all told me. Y'all told me the newcomer is the most important person in here. And I find out today the hardest thing in the world to do is something that you don't want to do. And I still wrestle with that on a daily basis. But thank God for this wonderful gift of recovery, y'all. I appreciate each and every one of y'all who've been available to help me to stay away from a drinking a drug one day at a time. And my drug of choice was crack cocaine and Love Boat. I love Love Boat, you know. And I've done a lot of insane stuff off of the influence of Love Boat. But thank God I don't have to be a part of that Love Boat crew no more. Captain Steuben is not in charge of me today. You know, he's not in charge today, you know. But self-centered fear is the tsunami, y'all. It is the tsunami. It is the end of days. It is that Katrina, Tornado Hurricane 5, you know, that dominated my life for so long, y'all. And thank God that I don't have to allow it to dominate my life today. I'd like to thank each and every one of y'all for coming out today and being support of N.A. And I thank N.A. for this wonderful gift of recovery. And all my D.C. crew, I appreciate y'all coming out and supporting me. And I love each and every one of y'all out here. And thank y'all for allowing me to share. And I keep coming back. My name is Vernon W.